morning. This is Matt Winters, editor of the Chinook Observer in Long Beach, Washington, here after Deadline, our cooperative program with KMUN and the Daily Astorian, in which we have conversations with interesting local and regional people. Here with me this morning, along with Terry Wilson in the sound booth, is Deb Marriott, who is executive director of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program based in Portland, and which covers this entire area from the mouth of the river to Bonneville Dam. Thanks so much, Deb, for being here with me this morning.
Hello, Matt. Thanks so much for having me.
Deb and I are old friends and colleagues. I was chairman of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Program, or LCREP, or the partnership, as we call it in shorthand. You know, I was involved years ago, along with many local people here, Jim Bergeron, John Graves, John Westerholm, are some of the names that people might still remember who were involved in the Estuary Partnership and in its predecessor, which had sort of the mysterious, innocuous name of the Bi-State Study Program. Before me as chairman was Glenn Vancelo, who is the well-known and well-liked leader of the Northwest Waterways Association, and then Representative Brad Witt followed me as chairman. I haven't been so much involved in recent years, but LCREP has continued to really carry on and be one of the more interesting nonprofit organizations that serve our area in a whole array of ways, in which that we'll explore a little bit in this brief half hour. But I thought I'd start asking you, Deb, with sort of the ABCs primer of the thing, and start out with just what is an estuary, and why is an estuary so important as to justify anybody's attention?
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt. That was a nice reminder of our early days in history. It really speaks to the pretty long commitment that so many folks have to the river. I'm always reminded when I'm out, especially on the river and down the river, just how connected we are to it. And I really appreciate and look fondly back on Bob Eaton was another one from Astoria that was one of the early partners, and John and John England and Jim and you. It's amazing y'all stick with it as long and hard as you do, but but sometimes the walls get put up in front of us. They're not so easy to take down.
Well, you too. You've been a wonderful director for the program, and we sure appreciate all your efforts over these years.
Well, that's kind. Well, an estuary. A lot of folks say to me, how can you be an estuary and go up to Bonneville Dam? And that's a great question. An estuary, as a lot of us know, is where the fresh water of a river system meets the salt water. And in the Columbia system, that's down close to the mouth. It's about 46 or so miles in. We do cover another 100 miles of the river, and that's because the National Estuary Program allows estuaries to include tidally influenced waters. So for us, we're able to go up to Bonneville and up the tributaries to tidally influenced waters. So on the Oregon side, we go up as far as the falls in Oregon City.
Mm-hmm. Just in sort of a scientific or pragmatic way, what functions do estuaries perform, or, you know, what makes them a key element of our natural environment?
Yeah, you know, they're probably one of the most important locations in our river and systems and water bodies. They are teeming with life, from the small, you know, invisible critters, macroinvertebrates and microinvertebrates, to the larger species that we see every day, the fish and sea lions and others. They are also abundant wetlands, shallow wetlands, mudflats, streams. All of those components of an ecosystem are critical to sustaining life, providing nutrients and from both the land and the sea, and they come together in these really robust estuaries and delta areas of rivers that make it really critical for water quality. Then they also provide functions. They help minimize damaging from floods. And then I can't help but also note they're great places for recreation and just quality of life. So they sort of hit us on all fronts, an economic front from the resources they provide us, a health front from the water quality and flooding protection opportunities they provide for us, and then just the ability to go out and take a breath and paddle for a while and recharge yourself.
Mm-hmm. So our Columbia River Estuary Partnership is part of the National Estuary Program, you know, one of, I think, approximately 2 dozen or something around the nation. Can you describe in shorthand what the National Estuary Program is and how we came to be a part of this overarching program?
Yeah, the National Estuary Program was created by Congress. It's authorized in the Clean Water Act. It came about in 1987, largely after the successful efforts in Chesapeake Bay and some preliminary efforts in Puget Sound. What I think is the beauty of the National Estuary Program is when Congress created it, they charged local communities to come together and solve problems locally. There's no federal blueprint, there's no EPA requirements, other than you bring your community together, you make sure you have all the diverse interests at the table, you look at the science, and then as a community, you develop a plan, a set of actions, and implement those actions. We completed our plan, and as you noted, you were with us on the board at that time, finished our plan in 1999, and we've been implementing a set of 43 actions since then. Our actions address habitat loss, water quality, and information and education. The National Estuary Program actually was just reauthorized by Congress this year. And one of the things when I'm working with the federal legislators that they like about the program is it's getting a lot of on-the-ground results. There's a little bit of planning time at the beginning, but most of the focus of the National Estuary Program is supposed to be bringing folks together to improve the water quality and get an on-the-ground improvement.
Sounds like, from what you've said about the reauthorization, that it has pretty decent bipartisan support.
It does, because I think the 28 programs around the country are delivering the results like we are here, and members of Congress respond positively to that when they see the public's money being spent well. I think in terms of why the Lower River became part of the National Estuary Program, there were really three reasons that supported the nomination by the two governors. One test is that you have to be a river of national significance, and of course that's easy to assert for the Columbia. You also have to show degradation, and that was what our predecessor program you referred to, the Bi-State Program, determined. They spent 6 years looking at a variety of aspects of water quality, sediment, and fish, and in fact confirmed what a lot of folks suspected. There were the legacy contaminants in water, fish, and sediment. They were having injurious effects to river otter reproduction, osprey eggshells, and habitat had been lost by about 50%. And the third rationale that the states advanced in EPA recognized was there at that time had been a lack of attention in the Lower River. There was a lot of investment in issues above Bonneville Dam, but very little investment up until then in the Lower River. Of course, that changed dramatically in 1997 when the 13 species of salmonids were listed as threatened and endangered. That really drew a lot of folks' attention down here to the Lower River. Good news, bad news kind mm-hmm. of thing.
That raises a variety of issues. One of the things that I always found interesting about the Estuary Partnership is the broad cross-section of participation that it has engendered, you know, which we refer to sort of by the shorthand word of stakeholders. But mm-hmm. I was really always fascinated to look around the room and see people from the paper and pulp industry, you know, ag, mm-hmm. A wide array of federal and state agencies, you know, total ignorant common citizens like myself. You know, it really was inspirational to see so many people come together and basically share a common goal of a good river for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the strengths of the National Estuary Program and the Estuary Partnership is we are not litigants and sort of hardline advocates. We do advocate for the river and try to stay focused on that. And our board over the years has said we really want to participate with projects as they are designed and as they come along. So we very rarely have taken positions on particular activity, trying to, again, look for the best solution that helps the most people. That's not easy because the system, you know, we talk a lot about balance. When we see a development project, for example, we want to balance the economic interest and the environmental issues. And that's really tough because the system is kind of out of balance. We weren't doing that balancing from settlement on. Had we been, we probably wouldn't. I guess the partnership may not even be here. But, so it is hard, and it's hard to sit around the table and make sure all the interests are heard and incorporated into solutions. We can do it most of the time, and as I said, only twice if we had to take a position, felt we wanted to take a position on something. And when you do that, it almost always isn't something, there's someone that's going to feel not part of that decision.
Well, and as I think you alluded to earlier, it really isn't a regulatory body. It was always our intention from the get-go that it not be anything particularly resembling, for instance, the Columbia Gorge Commission. It, you know, and that was not always a popular way to go. There were certainly people that wanted it to be more forceful than it can be, just based on the enabling legislation and the concept that it that decisions be driven by a consensus rather than some other process.
Exactly.
So, I thought before we went in to what exactly you are doing to follow through on those action items that it would be useful to spend a minute just talking about the public involvement process that arrived at that list. There was quite an extensive outreach effort.
There was. The management committee members at the time, and I think there were about 34 of you, took very seriously your role representing your constituents. And at several points during, the old milestones, I guess you'd call them, as we were looking at the science and thinking about what actions might address those, the management committee members went out and met with your constituents, and your staff at the time, us, went out and helped you do that, you know, coordinated the meeting times and schedules, but you all led some very intense discussions with the folks that you were on the board to represent. That really helped make sure we were listening and that we were all representing the people that we, in the interest that we were there to represent. We always learned something new. And we often, what we tried to do is not just show them what we were thinking, but ask them to help us to take us to the next step. And then the management committee would go back and refine their input, their decisions based on the input we were hearing. And then we did a few slightly innovative things. We took a giant ad out in area newspapers and asked people to rank a set of 21 problems in the river according to, against each other, really, for the risk they felt they posed to us. And then we also had scientists rank that list and compared the two. A lot of times when you do those risk rankings, general public folks like you and I rank things very differently than the scientific community. And you might recall when we did that ranking, both communities ranked habitat loss as the number one issue facing the lower river, which is a little unprecedented in the world of risk ranking. So that was extremely helpful and important for the board as it went forward in carving out what the Estuary Partnership's actions and missions would be. So I'm pretty proud of how extensive the management committee members worked on that. I have not seen such a fully engaged and committed steering committee as that was. It was pretty phenomenal, I think. I think as a result, we do have a set of actions that are pretty focused. A lot of my colleagues have 200 actions, or one of them has 300 actions. We have 43 tight actions, and they give us a lot of latitude within those. Habitat loss includes a lot, and recovering habitat includes a lot of different opportunities for us, but they keep us focused. Habitat loss, water quality, toxics monitoring and reduction, and information and education. It makes it a lot easier to do our fundraising and our grant writing and to get some results, see some sort of bang for our investment.
This is Matt Winters, editor of the Chinook Observer in Long Beach here at KMUN in Astoria. Today we're talking after deadline with Deb Marriott, who is executive director of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership, about that program. And next we're going to swing our attention to what is actually being done right now. Deb, I thought to start out with, though, that I'd have you give people your web address, which will take them to really an excellent overview of the program and how they can participate.
Our website is www.lcrep.org, so the initials of the organization, Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership, our initials, .org. And we love feedback on our website. See, we want to make sure it's something folks can navigate through pretty easily and feel they're getting good information. So shoot me an email if anybody goes out and uses it, and let me know what you think.
You're also very good about communicating in other ways, and one thing that I try to always keep up on are your monthly updates. Recently, I received the update for August. We'll be coming up on one for September soon. Things do change incrementally, but you know, August seemed to include a particularly strong list of things that you're up to, and really sparked my interest in having this discussion with you this morning. Can you sort of, I guess, first of all, looking at the list of what you're doing now, maybe pick out the headline item or two that you think are really the most salient or important of the things that you're up to?
I think that it probably the first one that comes to mind is, over the last 10 years, over 100 regional partners, CREST, us, the Columbia Land Trust, Watershed Councils, have restored 16,235 acres of habitat. I think that's impressive. The management plan goal was 16,000 by 2010, so we actually met that goal. It means only that we've returned about half of what's lost since settlement, so we have a lot more work to do, and the next level of restoration is going to be very challenging. But I think that is a really significant success for the region. And if I can make a point, the partnership really is the region. I'm always sensitive to making sure folks know that the group of us sitting in Portland, where our current offices happen to be, are not taking credit for all of the amazing work that the Fish Recovery Board does or the Land Trust. But we do, Congress does want us to report to them about the region, so sometimes I know people get a little nervous and think we're trying to take credit for what we haven't done. We've spurred part of that. The partnership has funded just under 3,000 of those acres, so we certainly are contributing directly in terms of money and expertise, and we've done a lot of data collection to support restoration, like bathymetry and land cover. But that 16,000 acres took a huge number of local entities working really committedly to restoring habitat.
Well, that really is an impressive number when you think about all the incremental losses there were on the river from, you know, the death of a thousand cut sort of thing that happens when, you know, I buy my riverfront home and decide that I want to extend my front yard a little bit, and eats into really vital habitat for salmon and the things that salmon eat and all the important other things that go on in the river.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Another success story for us is our education program. We thought long and hard when we started implementing our plan in 2000 about what we could add to education, because lots of organizations do amazing environmental education programs, and of course our schools do as well. The niche that we found was something we could fill was helping teachers develop curriculum and then helping them deliver that curriculum in the classroom and add an outdoor application to it. We are always surprised when we're out with kids how many kids live along the river but haven't been to the river or haven't been on the river. And kids today are kind of taught to be scared to be outside. A lot of kids are not comfortable just being in nature. And we think that one of the ways we can help that is just to bring them out, get them on the river, get them planting trees, getting them to pulling out invasive species. And, you know, kids just light up when you give them a shovel and clippers and gloves. And, so we actually acquired two 34-foot canoes a couple of years ago so we can get 16 kids out at a time, so we can take a whole class out at once. And we have worked with over 120,000 kids in the last 10 years. And all of our programs help teachers meet their benchmark requirements. So we think we're kind of helping where the public schools are struggling right now. And we're also getting kids outdoors and feeling comfortable. And we've had some great partners like REI and Sierra Club help us do that through their grants and long-term support. I think if you don't mind me going to what we need to do and focus on and haven't been as successful on, can
please
I
do.
Do you mind? It's really water quality and toxics. We all know they're there. We did 3 years more study from 2004 to 2007, found, not surprisingly, the new so-called emerging contaminants, pharmaceuticals and contaminants from personal care products, and yet there still is no sustained monitoring on the main stem Columbia. You will recall the Bi-State looked at over 500 different sites when it was monitoring, and right now there's only one site at Beaver Army Terminal that's being monitored on a regular basis.
That's discouraging.
It's very discouraging. The good news is that our congressional delegation also thought it was discouraging, and they've introduced the Columbia River Restoration Act, which would authorize Congress to appropriate funds to the Columbia for toxics monitoring and reduction. So that's been introduced. It's had two hearings in both the House and one each in the House and Senate. That Senate committee has actually voted the bill out. So it's moving along, and we're, as you might guess, working pretty closely with them to hope it goes further.
Right. I guess none of us will hold our breaths until after the current election.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I remember from my involvement that the lack of monitoring on the river was always an eye-raising sort of gap that, you know, you think about our modern country being almost over-monitored in some respects, but with the Columbia, there seemed to almost sometimes be a willful decision not to want to know what was going on out there, and it was discouraging to find out just how many information gaps persisted and still do.
That's, well, you know, it could be that. It also could be everyone thinks someone else is taking care of it. It's a big river. People tend to think sometimes it takes care of itself. It flushes so much water through. And there have been one-time studies, for sure, lots of studies done by various entities, but there's no way to knit those together and watch the trends in the system. And that's what we're really trying to move on here.
I was interested to see in your August report the brief summary of something you just alluded to, the survey of bathymetric data, which is, you know, a scary word to people, but basically just means looking at the underwater surface and figuring out what's going
on down there.
And it's been one of my pet causes living in Iwako as I do, which, you know, a century ago was all deep water, and now essentially almost all isn't deep water, and just how that came about and all the changes that have gone on due to navigation projects and other changes in the river. Can you talk a little bit about that and the survey of terrestrial landscape?
Yeah, we're working with a whole lot of really smart people, University of Washington and the Tell Labs and USGS and lots of local folks to put together what we're calling an ecosystem classification. And part of it, that includes six different data sets, and one of them is bathymetry, which you've defined very well. It's sort of, I call it the topography, the reverse topography of the riverbed. So we're completing that now, I think, and what we're actually doing is filling gaps that existed in the bathymetric data. The Corps has periodically done the same type of data collection. So there were several holes in their databases, and some of it hadn't been updated for 60 years. And as you just said, the riverbed changes a lot faster than that. So we're completing that, and then we're looking at land cover. and updating our land cover data as well. We've looked at soils and geology, and we're putting all that together in this classification system, which will allow us, our partners, Crest and Land Trust, Fish Recovery Board, to be able to look at the landscape in terms of and decide which habitats have the most potential for restoration, which are going to take different types of techniques to achieve those. It will just make us a little smarter and more strategic about how we're identifying restoration projects.
You know, around the world, you look at watersheds, and deforestation tends to be a big issue, and I don't know if that's true here or not. Certainly, urbanization, real estate development has slowed down, but, you know, we look around our hills, and there's still, sure, a lot of logging going on, which we like from a job standpoint, but can you make any general observations about what your examinations are revealing about forest cover around the river?
I can't yet. We're just completing that and expect to have that data finished at the end of this calendar year. So I don't know what the changes have been in the last 5 years or last 10 years when we last have data to look at. But that tree cover, vegetative cover is part of one of the data sets that we're collecting, as well as impervious surface, which is the other big one when you get to the more urban areas, and how many parking lots and driveways and roads we seem to keep adding to the mix.
One of your programs that has always been, again, near and dear to my heart, although I've had little to do with it in recent years, is the effort to get more adults out on the river by promoting a water trail. I see that that's still an active part of the program. We're getting close to the end of our half hour, but I thought we'd spend a few moments at least talking about it.
Sure. The water trail is probably one of the best things we do to get people out. That in our weekly plantings in the winter months. The water trail folks can find out about the water trail by going to our website. It's www.lcrep.org, and there's a link to the water trail website. You can go on the water trail website, find out, put in sites, take out sites, for one-day trips, multi-day trips. You can find information about restaurants and places to stay if you want to not camp, or you can find information about where to camp at various sites along the way. There's lots of safety information on the website. There's tide information. We work with the Coast Guard to make sure we keep people safe when they're out there, so we try to provide that kind of information as well.
Although it's passed now, a similar thing for kids that you put on that was really interesting this summer was the adventure camp at Fort Clatsop. We're into our final seconds, but will you be doing that again this coming year?
We sure will have summer camps, and we're hoping to expand them into other parts of our study area as well to make them more accessible.
That's wonderful. Well, yeah. It is really one of the key things of getting kids and grown-ups alike down there on the river where we can appreciate it. It really, every time you get somebody there on the surface of the river, it creates a new ally, I think.
It does, a whole new perspective when you're there. Yeah.
Well, Deb, it's been a delight talking to you. I've been here with Deb Marriott, Executive Director of the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership this morning. I really appreciate your time, and thanks again to KMUN for hosting After Deadline. I'll see you again soon here, and I'll talk to you, Deb. Thanks
very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.